So this week, we're in week two of our series, Putting Down Roots. And the idea of the series is that when you put down roots into spiritual things, like a tree, you're going to find health all over the tree. And when there's damage and deadness and dying in the tree, drought in the tree, sometimes we address those things at the surface level, and there's reasons for that, but sometimes the cause is not on the surface. It's not in the leaves. It's in the roots. And I think there's a spiritual death in our culture that only the church really knows how to answer. Only Christ can answer. And so I think it's really important that we get this right and that we put down roots into eternal things. And so I want to challenge you to do that. So we're going to base this message out of a passage out of Proverbs chapter 24. If you want to turn to that, Proverbs chapter 24, it's page 450 in the Bibles there in your seats. We'll also put it up on the screen. While you're turning, let me give just a word of credit. I don't do this very often because I don't do this very often, but I got a lot of the outline coming out of this text from a conference I heard a couple years ago from a guy named Levi Lusco. He's a pastor out in Montana. And so I just want to say, hey, Levi did a great thing. I'm going to pass on part of that to you, and I want to give credit to that where it is due. All right? Proverbs 24, we're going to start in verse 30 if you're trying to find it in your Bible, page 450. Verse 30 says, I went past the field of a sluggard, past the vineyard of someone who has no sense, and thorns had come up everywhere. The ground was covered with weeds, and the stone wall was in ruins. So you're getting a picture of a garden, a landscaped area that formerly had this vision and direction and purpose, but had become completely overgrown with weeds and thorns, and it was in ruins. Next screen says, I applied to my heart what I observed, and I learned the lesson from what I saw. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a thief and scarcity like an armed man. He says that he took the knowledge of the physical garden that was in disrepair, the physical vineyard that was in disrepair, and he associated, in my words, to spiritual things. I've titled this message, So Many Weeds. And so we're going to use the analogy of weeds physically to talk about weeds in our real lives, like spiritual, emotional weeds. And this is really important for us because in a room this size and those watching online, there are weeds in our life. And we know that they're there. Sometimes we just get used to them. Sometimes we ignore them. We've had a little sleep, a little slumber spiritually to attend to those weeds. And they've grown up on their own. We didn't have to plant them. They've grown up on their own. And now they're in our life. And now they're in our relationship. And now they're in our family. And now they're in our nation. And we've not attended to them because they grow up on their own. And we've got to address them. You can have weeds in your life. You can have weeds in your family. If you're part of a job, you can get weeds that grow up in the culture of your company. You can certainly have weeds in our church. I think our nation is showing signs of some weeds that need long past to be attended to. Now, I want to acknowledge, if you're new to Wellspring, this is an unusual series. This is not how we always do it. We focused on roots as the idea, and so we focused on physical metaphors. So last week, we talked about trees and the roots of trees. Today, we're talking about weeds, and that's weird. I get it. In fact, I'm really focusing this message on the question, why don't we weed? Like if in a garden, if you have a flower bed, why don't you weed? Weeds come up on their own. If you have weeds that are there, why have you allowed that to happen? And more importantly, is the spiritual question, the emotional question, the relational question, why don't we address the weeds that are in our life? Sometimes we don't see them, but often we know they're there and have just gotten used to them. And why is that? Well, I think just like the writer of Proverbs, I think the things that are true about the physical reasons we don't weed are absolutely true about the spiritual reasons we don't weed. And I'm going to use that as a metaphor for this morning, if you'll allow me. First reason I think we don't weed is because weeding is hard. I mean, weeds come easy, right? You don't have to plant them. You don't have to nurture them. You don't have to prune them. You don't have to fertilize them. They come on their own. In fact, you have a crack in a sidewalk and a weed will grow. But you try to get a plant, a tomato or a cucumber or a rose or a flower or something, it's difficult. But weeds come easy. And so weeding is hard. It's hard to deal with weeds. Now, I don't want anybody to feel like they're bragging or propping themselves up, but you know if this is you, how many of you, your yards are pretty awesome. Just like there's very few weeds, the grass is very green and thick. Just, I mean, show hands. How many, go ahead, you know who you are. Don't feel bad. Go ahead and put your hand up. All right, I'm not talking to you at all this next few minutes. Just ignore you. where are my people? Go ahead and put that next screen up there. Where are my people, right? Like if you sprayed the weeds, there might not be anything left. It'd just be dirt. Like you just kill everything because there's nothing left, right? Like how many of you, so I saw a study by the University of Edinburgh about dandelion seeds. And they wanted to see how far will a dandelion seed travel. And they actually are using the technology that they're learning from dandelions to make better drones because God's smarter than we are. And the dandelions do more efficient work than even our drones do. So they're trying to study this thing. And the University of Edinburgh found that a dandelion seed can travel 100 kilometers, which is crazy to me. That means if the state of Tennessee decided to outlaw dandelions, and they came in with crop dusters and just round up the whole state, you know, just spray everything to kill all the dandelions. Now, the bad side, we'd have a third arm growing out, all of us, you know, because of all the damage. But if they just sprayed everything, killed all the dandelions, you could still get a dandelion in Huntsville, Alabama, to give its seed into your backyard. That's 100 kilometers. And start the whole mess over again. Dandelions are phenomenally impressive that way. Now, the great thing is we'd have a third arm to pull that dandelion out, but that's a whole separate issue. Just ignore that. So the reason it's tough to grow plants and easy to grow weeds is that they just come on their own, which makes weeding very difficult, physically, literally, but more importantly, spiritually. Consider this. In Genesis chapter 3, when Adam and Eve sinned, they brought weeds into the garden. Weeds are introduced. It says thorns and thistles in Genesis chapter 3. But that's not all that came into the garden in Genesis chapter 3, not just the literal weeds. Sin brought other consequences. So snakes were cursed. They had to crawl on their belly. Good for them. Obviously, they shouldn't have been there anyway. Snakes were cursed. Work was cursed. Not that you have to work. That's not a curse. They worked prior to sin coming in. Work is not sinful. If you hate your job, that's not necessarily supposed to be the case. In fact, I think one of the reasons that retirees sometimes struggle to find their footing is because we weren't designed to sit around. Like, I think you're supposed to be active in your life. And so work is not a cause of curse. Work is not a consequence of sin, but work was cursed in the garden because of sin. Work is now difficult. Work can now sometimes be unproductive. You can have people whose job feels like it has no meaning or purpose. That's all a result of sin. By the sweat of your brow, God says in Genesis chapter 3. So work is cursed, but also relationships are cursed. I mean, some of you feel like I just described your whole life. Your work's cursed, your relationships are cursed. Yeah, that's Tuesday. I just feel that way. But Genesis 3 says that relationships are hard because of sin. So now husbands are trying to overpower their wives. Wives are trying to overpower their husbands. And relationships are cursed. Fourth, you see that God feels distant. I want you to catch this picture. It clicked with me this week when I was looking at it. In Genesis chapter 2, the end of Genesis chapter 2, God's done creating and God presides over a wedding ceremony between Adam and Eve, two people who were completely vulnerable, completely patient, completely kind, completely loving, and God is the pastor presiding over this wedding ceremony. It's a beautiful picture. That's the end of chapter 2. And then sin comes into the picture in chapter 3, and by the end of chapter 3, their work is cursed, their relationship's been cursed, and God has banished Adam and Eve from the garden that he made specifically for them. By the end of chapter 4, Cain, their son, has killed Abel, their other son, and their great-great-great-great-grandson has forever defiled women, forever defiled marriage by introducing polygamy into the picture. Sin has wrecked everything in three chapters. Weeds have entered humanity and nothing will ever be the same. Our sin has unraveled the culture and the spiritual weeds that began that week are still alive and well today and we still have to deal with them today. But we don't weed because it's hard. I mean, there are things in your life right now. I'm not going to get personal. I'm not going to ask you to repeat, but think about it. God will put these ideas in your head. There are weeds in your life, spiritual weeds in your life right now, and you know they're there, and they need to be attended to, but it's hard. And you're just not willing right now to give what it takes to fix it. I want to challenge you to deal with the difficult weeds you've been avoiding in your life. I want to challenge you to prioritize that in a way that it deserves, because the spiritual landscape of your soul is that important. I think, one, we don't weed because it's hard. Two, we don't weed because we already did it. I mean, I already pulled those weeds, and now they're back again. I don't want to pull them again. Do you ever feel that way when you're gardening? Like, you go out and you get your front, you know, flower bed all together, and 5 minutes later, there's a weed sticking up, like talking. Like, it's just so frustrating to me when you do that. And it's the same with life. Like, dishes don't stay washed. Houses don't stay cleaned. Kids don't stay obedient. I mean, you finish the laundry and like, you get the last folded shirt into the drawer, and you have a 12 glorious minute rest until laundry needs to start up again, right? It's just constant. Weeds keep growing. And so you get to the point where you start accepting weeds. You think, I already did that. I already dealt with that. I don't want to do with it again. There's also a little game that goes along with it, that point at this juncture. It's like a corollary to the second one. It's the game I call Not My Turn. This is the game where you say, I pulled that weed last time. It's your turn. It's not my turn to do it. Or, I've pulled that weed more often in the past than you have, so I'm going to let you handle this one, and I'm not going to. And sometimes it's kind of harmless and silly, like, I'm not going to load the dishwasher. I'm just going to let the dishes pile up in the sink until they fall out onto the floor. I don't care. I'm not doing it. It's your turn. Or, I'm not going to address that behavior in the kid again. I did it the last five times. I'm going to just lay here on the couch and watch you deal with it. Like, I'm not going to do it, right? And we have those moments. And that's pretty harmless and all of that stuff. The clothes pile up and the sink piles up and the grass grows tall. That's all harmless. But sometimes it's not harmless. Sometimes it's piles of unforgiveness. And you're like, I said I'm sorry last time. I say I'm sorry more than you do. I'm not doing it again. Or there's a deficit of kindness. That's the weed growing up. And you're like, I don't want to be the one who's kind again. I'm going to let you handle that. Or an unwillingness to compromise. Like, I'm always the one who gives in. I'm always the one who accommodates. I'm always the one who makes things work because you want it that way. And I'm just not going to do it again. I'm going to sit here in my stubbornness and wait for you to come to me. You know the right thing to do. You know what God is prompting you specifically to do. You just did it last time, so you don't want to. The problem is that James reminds us to remember that it's sin to know what we're to do and then not to do it. So when the Bible says a little sleep and a little slumber and a little folding of the hands to rest and poverty will come on, that doesn't just mean physical poverty. Sometimes the cause of physical poverty is laziness in Proverbs 4, spiritual weeds. But sometimes the cause of spiritual weeds is not laziness, it's pride. I pulled that weed last time. I always pull that weed. I'm going to let you handle it. And so weeds grow in our relationship, and weeds grow in our soul, and weeds grow in our nation that we're not attending to, even though we see them. Because we did it last time. Either way, the lack, when we know better, is a sin. And we've got to do better. We don't weed because it's hard. We don't weed because we already did it. Third, we don't weed because we don't have time. Like right now, I walked out of the house early this morning to walk over here, and I live here in the neighborhood, so I walked out of the house to walk over, and I walked right by my front flower bed. And my front flower bed has more weeds in it now than it probably has all summer. Like, it's just kind of gotten away from me the last couple weeks, which is so ironic. Here I'm standing to you talking about weeding. God's laughing at that. Anyway, but it is. And if you were to ask me why that is, it's not that I don't know what to do. It's not that I don't see it. I've just not had time. It's been busy the last couple weeks. And I would tell you it's because I don't have time. But the reality is, if you ask me about the weeds in my soul, or the weeds in this church, or the weeds in my family, I'd probably tell you the same thing. I've just not had time to address that. And maybe you would use that same analogy. And yet, ABC News reports that the average American spends a staggering 11 hours, 54 minutes each day connected to some form of media, TV, smartphones, radio, or games. 11 hours, 54 minutes is almost exactly half of your day, and you're asleep for a chunk of the rest of it. That adds up, if that's right, that adds up to 83 hours and 18 minutes a week on our TV, smartphones, radio, or games. Last week I said to you that the key to a healthy soul, if you didn't catch this message, you ought to go watch it. It's pretty good, if I do say so myself. And so last week, but if you did get a key to a healthy soul is to put down roots into eternal things. And specifically, the Bible addresses the Word of God. Like, you need to study the Bible, and that's a key to healthy souls. To get into this book and just read it and learn it and grow a little over time, a little over time, a little over time, you need to do that. And most of us would say, yeah, I probably should do more of that, but I don't have time. I don't have time. In 1942, C.S. Lewis wrote a classic novel that some of you have read called The Screwtape Letters. In this novel, he creates a fictional relationship between an older demon and his nephew, kind of an understudy. And the older demon is writing letters to the understudy, teaching him how to trip us up, teaching him how to get us to quit following God, or how to get into sin, or get into, like, it's just a fictional picture of that. But it's written from 1942. And I'm going to read you a quote out of one of his letters that was true in 1942. It's exponentially more true today. The mentor demon writes, whatever their bodies, talking about us, whatever their bodies do affects their souls. It's so funny how mortals, us, always picture us, demons, as putting things into their mind. In reality, our best work is done by keeping things out. That's powerful. Now, if I'm honest, I'm skeptical about the 83 hours a week thing. I am. I think there's some doubling up there. Like, you're going down the road in your car to work, but you've got the radio on. Well, does that count as you're just sitting there focused on that? Well, not really. You're doing multiple things. Or you're watching television while you've got your phone on, and then you're looking at your iPad for, like, you're doing two or three things at the same time, and that doubles up the time. So I don't know that there's 11 hours, 54 minutes focused every day, but let's say it's 100% wrong. And it's only like 6 hours a day. That's still 6 hours a day that we're spending devoting to digesting media. 40 hours a week of digesting media that pushes us in ways that are often antithetical to God. The over-sexualization of our culture, the rampant division and hatred that's all around us, the constant negativity. We're spending 6 hours a day, 40 hours a week if it's half wrong, digesting all of that junk into our soul. And if I could only get you to change one thing, and I'm not talking just to you, if I could get me to change one thing, it would be to address this, and we would instantly free up lots of time to put down roots into things that are more beneficial to your life and family and home. I was just curious, for comparison, if 80 hours is the right number, how many hours do Americans spend on other things? So the average American spends 47 hours and 36 minutes sleeping, which, that's a stark comparison, that you spend almost twice as much on a screen as you do asleep, especially when we're sleep deprived. The average American spends 34 hours and 24 minutes at work, which I'm thinking, who has that job? Get to work. There's things to do out here. Come on. Go in earlier or something. 34 hours a week? Good grief. Anyway, so 2/3 of Americans say they read their Bible once a month or less. But we're reading our screen 83 hours a week, and we don't have time to look at a Bible? Like, even just to glance it. That's not studying. That's just there's Bible apps if you want it on the screen. I mean, I can help you. Anyway, that's crazy. And but by comparison, we're digesting 11 hours of media a day, often focused on everybody else's life. Hannah Harrison says, we live in a world that's so concerned with what other people are doing or saying that we forget to look inwardly at our own hearts. Even in our stillest moments, we tend to be focused more on what other people are doing. And that is so true. The phenomena of social media, the fascination with celebrities and their personal lives, politicians and sports leagues. Like, we spend so much time thinking about what everybody else is doing, and we don't attend to our own soul and the weeds that need to be addressed inside of us. We've got to do better. Let me give you one more stat, and then we'll move on. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but Forbes magazine reports that the average American family spends over $3,000 a year on all of these services. That's not buying phones and tablets. That's just providing the services. And I just want to put that out there for all of us so that when we say to ourselves or to others or to whatever that that we just don't have, not only do we not have time to do the things of God, but we don't have money to be generous and help somebody out or have money to tithe or give or whatever. Like, we may have missed some perspective on that. Now listen, this is not to be snide or to give anybody a guilt trip. That doesn't help anybody, so I'm not trying to do that. My point is, if the American church, people of God, would put their time and their money where their mouth is, the United States of America would be in a drastically different spiritual condition. But we don't do that. We don't line up what we believe with our time and our effort and our energy and our prayers and our money. We don't do that. We would just rather complain about it. And it's not okay for us to complain about our culture if we're not going to back it up with our life. I mean, I don't say that judgmentally to any of you. I say it also for me. If I'm not willing to back up with my life the problems, the weeds I see in culture, then I should just keep my mouth shut about it. It's time we pointed it out, but not just to each other or online. It's time we pointed it out to God in prayer, and we put our money where our mouth is and our time where our mouth is and our effort where our mouth is. We don't weed because it's hard. We don't weed because we already did it. We don't weed because we don't have time. And our culture is facing the consequences, the spiritual poverty that accompanies those excuses. And for me, at least, they're often excuses. My favorite is number four. We don't weed because we don't want to get on our knees. I thought, what a picture this is, you know? If I'm going to work on my flower bed, I've got to get down on my hands and knees and get down into the dirt and deal with it. And God, in his sovereignty, has given us an analogy of prayer where we lower ourselves, humble ourselves before him, and say, God, here's this weed in my life that I can't seem to fix. Will you do something about it? You know, the American mindset, some of you may have thought of it already during the first three points, is if I've got a weed, I need to buck up and pull it. Well, sometimes you do, right? But sometimes the weeds are bigger and more systemic and substantial than you can deal with, and you need to go to your Father in heaven who has power to do something about that in prayer, but we're too busy to do that, right? We're too busy. We have to lower ourselves to do it. And sometimes we need to lower ourselves because God has in mind for us to be about some weeding in our homes or in our communities or our job and our nation that's really above our heads. And God wants to use us in that way, but we're scared, you know, to try that, and we need to pray to give us strength to do it. For example, in Acts chapter 2, when Jesus turned the church over, right before he ascended to heaven, he turned the church over to 11 guys, and they were stunned, and they were scared, and they were not ready for that moment. The Bible says these young men were uneducated. It says they were ordinary, and yet God used them to change a city, and God used them to change a nation, and God used them to change, honestly, all of history. And we divide history based on that person's life of Jesus, but then the church that was started from them changed all of Western civilization. Secular historians agree with what I just said. They changed the world. The reason they were overwhelmed at the start of chapter 1 of Acts is because God was asking them, 11 of them, soon to be 12, they added a 12th person to lead. God was asking the 11 of them, the 12 of them, to oversee a church of 120 people, and they weren't ready for that. That was over their heads. They weren't qualified for the 12 of them to co-lead 120 people. And that's a lot to be pastors over a group like that, about 10 people each. That's a lot. That's at the end of chapter 1. By the end of Acts chapter 4, those same guys were leading a church of over 15,000 people. And they were just as overwhelmed then as they were in chapter 1, but God was just as able to handle it then as he was in chapter 1, which makes Acts 2:42 quite the understatement. They devoted themselves to prayer. I bet that's right. You know, sometimes I read the Bible and I think, man, they prayed so much because they're pious. They didn't pray so much because they're pious. I think they prayed so much because they were scared. God, this is bigger than we can handle. And we know this is bigger than we can handle. You're going to have to come through. It's a mess. And so they devoted themselves to prayer. I dug into it. That word that we translate devoted is the Greek word proskartereo. It's hard for me to say. And it literally means to continue to do something with intense effort despite difficulty. So you devote yourself to it. You keep on. You persist in. They were in over their head completely. They knew it. The people around them knew it. Their spouses knew it. The church knew it. God knew it. And yet the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. If we're going to make progress in our homes, if we're going to make progress in our own character, at getting some weeds out that have been there, some of them generationally, if we're going to make progress in our communities and in our nation, we're going to have to get much better at going to God and asking Him to do the work that only He can do, to go onto our knees in prayer, because we're also, if we do what God's asking us to do, I believe it, we're going to be 100% in over our heads just like they were. In fact, this is not my notes, I really think that God is waiting every generation for a group to say, you know what? I'm willing to lay down my pride and be in over my head. If you get that for us, God, pour it on. We'll pay the price. We'll do the time in prayer. We'll humble ourselves before you. We don't know what to, I think God waits every generation for a group to do that. And when He gets one, He changes that nation. Maybe that'd be us. In John chapter 15, Jesus says, if you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. You'll get a lot of good stuff done spiritually. But apart from me, you can't do anything. So stop trying to pull all the weeds by yourself. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. If you're staying connected to God, He wants you to pray big prayers. And when you do that, it's to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. God wants you to pray big prayers, and God wants you to bear much fruit, and He wants you to devote yourself to that in spite of great difficulty with lots of effort, to be devoted to it as they were. And when you do, He comes on you in great power. But most of us don't get there because we're not willing to do that. We get sidetracked at the first little bit of whatever. You know, there used to be a phrase in the church, in the modern church, among a lot of active churches that are changing things, reach people and all that. There was a phrase that they often used. It was started by a pastor who was a kind of a leadership expert. And a lot of churches looked to him for advice, and so he used this phrase, and then a lot of churches started using the phrase. I've used it a number of times. I thought it was such a great phrase. It's called redemptive potential. And let me explain it to you before I tell you I don't agree with it anymore. The idea of redemptive potential is the idea that what would it be, what would Wellspring's redemptive potential be? Like if somehow we could quantify all of us getting on mission, all of us making time for God in our life, all of us making time to devote our energies not only to our personal life with Him, but into the church and to serving others and serving the community and reaching our neighbors. And like what's our redemptive potential if we all got all in? And man, there's a lot of analogies coming out of that, you know, hitting on all cylinders or whatever. People use all these analogies. But the idea, like, what is our redemptive potential as a church if we really got serious about this? And I always thought that's such a great question. I've decided it's the wrong question. Because Jesus is not up in heaven saying, boy, I hope Wellspring gets it right or we're in trouble. I hope Andy figures this thing out, or I don't know what to do. Gabriel, you got any ideas? No, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to do either. Like, I hope Andy figures this out, or we're in trouble. Like, that is not what's happening. God has never called the qualified. God has always qualified the called. Those who are willing to lay down their life, those who are willing to devote their time and their effort, their resources, their prayer, their energy, to pull the weeds in their own life, and then begin to pull the weeds in those around them and pull the weeds in their whole culture. To be willing to be led by God in over their heads. And humbly speaking, I take responsibility for what I need to take responsibility for. I think one of the problems of the American church is that the problems we face culturally are larger than our redemptive potential to solve. But they're not larger than His ability to lead and His ability to provide and His ability to care. They've never been larger than Him, and today is absolutely no exception. What did He say in Chronicles? If my people who are called by my name will reach their redemptive potential. He doesn't say it. He says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, then I will heal their land. And I think He still means that. And look around, friends. Our land needs healed. I've never seen us so divided. So last week I warned you, kind of forewarned, I guess, about where I was going to go over the next couple weeks. And the idea was I want to invite you, kind of, you know, top shelf. I want to invite you to say, I'm going to see every part of my life this way. So I'm going to go to work and see that as a mission field. I'm a pastor of those men and women who I work with. And I'm going to go to the soccer field, and I'm going to see those parents who are sitting there, or the baseball diamond. I'm going to see them as somebody I can invest in. And when my kids are playing in the neighborhood, I'm going to give popsicles to the kids or something. So I want to invest in those kids and their families. Like, I'm going to be a missionary for God. That's top rung. But I know a lot of us aren't there yet. So I told you over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to give you ideas of how you can be involved here so that together we can use our efforts to reach more people with the gospel. Because what I believe is true is when the ground is dark, from all the decay and mess that makes ground dark, that's when the best plants grow. And I think the time for harvest is near. And I want us all together on that. Okay? So I told you I was going to ask you to do a couple weeks in a row. And the idea is centered around a series we're calling Rooted. It's going to start right after Labor Day, and it's going to go all the way through Thanksgiving. So it'll be done before you get into the holidays and all that kind of stuff. And I want to ask you to invest, not just for the 10 weeks between this Labor Day and Thanksgiving, but for this season that we're in. I want to ask that you devote yourselves to prayer for our church and for your own soul with intense effort in spite of difficulty. I want to ask that you devote yourself to studying the scriptures with intense effort, devoted in spite of difficulties. To devote yourself being family to one another. I mean, that's one of the reasons we have these groups, our life groups, we're asking them all to be part of this Rooted so they can be devoted together with intense effort in spite of the difficulty. So over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to invite you to have an opportunity to be part of that Rooted experience. So this week, I want to ask that you consider signing up to be a Rooted leader. Now, if you sign up, it doesn't mean you're automatically in, because you can explore and think about it, and we'll talk to you and see if it's a good fit and all those things. But the idea would be you could say, I want to be part of that, and we'll come along and help you. If you're interested, the way you volley it to us is here on the screen. You can either text Rooted to 615, there's that number. You can leave your information at the Welcome Center across the table if you don't want to do technology things, or you can write Rooted on your communication card. You don't do all those. Any of those would get you on our radar. So we'll reach out to you and say, hey, how can we help? We'll provide you some training. If you look at it and say, it's over my head, I can't do it, we'll pray with you on that. If you say, I'm willing to anyway, we'll help you. If you say, I'm not willing to, we understand. We'll let you out. But no guilt. But this will get you on our radar, okay? And what we're asking you to do is not necessarily be a teacher. We're not necessarily asking you to be a Bible scholar. We're asking you to walk alongside a handful of other men and women as we all go through the study together. So I'll teach it 10 weeks in a row here, and each week we'll kind of do a lecture lab model where we debrief afterwards. And some of you have led groups before. You're a prime target for this. Some of you are leading the life group now. We ask your group to consider this. Some of you have never led a group here, but you've led a group in other places. Some of you think, I might be open to that. I coach my kids' ball. You know, maybe I could do that. We want to encourage you to think about that. And this is the way you let us know you're interested. So that's today. So we want to challenge you to do it right now to get you ready to go so that we can invite people to join your group later. Next week, we're going to have an impact team sign up. And when we leave service next week, there'll be booths all over our church property, even inside and outside, where you can find out more information about what it would be like to have a ministry here, helping with children's ministry, or helping on the worship team, or helping park cars, or hand out, you know, whatever. Like, we want to help with that, and you'll find out more information about that next week. And then 2 weeks from today, we're going to ask 100% of our church to sign up to be part of a Rooted group. So if you sign up today to be part of a leader, we will encourage people to join your group in 2 weeks, and we'll help recruit for you and all of that. But I'm going to ask 100% of us to devote these 10 weeks. It's 10 weeks. You can do this. To put down roots into something that's eternal. Because our nation needs that. Your family needs you to do that. And I think it's really beneficial. So I want to ask that you give it due attention. I want to ask that you invite God to have a bigger role in your life, a bigger role in your family's life than he's had. I want to invite you to put down roots into something that's eternal. Not just taking your place in a local church. That's great. I want to invite you to take your place in the larger movement of the history of Christianity. I mean, this is our time. This is what's been handed down to us. And it's a little bit messy for us right now. But you know, when Jesus handed the church over to those 11 guys, they weren't ready, and they led in their time, and they handed it off to the next group, and they went to home to be with the Lord, and it's gone down through the centuries, and now in our time, the church has been handed to us. And what are we going to do with it during this season that we've got, during these few short years, and this little bit of space that we're all in together to lead the people of God and those not connected to God into finding a deeper relationship with Him? This is our time. And I want all of us seeking out God. It's bigger than us. I want all of us praying. I want all of us devoted to this book because the Lord has opportunities to heal our land in ways that we'll never be able to do without Him. And I want to see what would happen if we all got serious about that together. I want to end it a little bit differently. Would you take a moment and stand up with me? I want to ask that, I want to pray over you, and then we'll, the band will come up and we'll have us sing a song together. But would you just bow your heads in prayer with me? Dear God, I want to ask that you would bring your power to bear on our lives. Every one of us, if we're honest, have weeds in our life, many of them that have been there for a long time. But for one reason or another, we've not attended to them, and maybe they're just bigger than us. Maybe it's something that's beyond our ability to pull. And so we yield to you, God. And we ask that you would do the work on our soul that we can't do on our own. And we ask that you do the work on our family and the work in our marriage and the work in our home. We ask that you do the work in our workplace, the work in our neighborhood, the work in our community, the work in our city, the work in our nation, our world. We need you to be more engaged in this life. You have plenty of power, plenty of ability, plenty of knowledge and insight, but we invite you, God, into a deeper level with us. And we invite you to tie into us, that we would put down roots into your life and your spirit so that you could pump your power and energy and spirit through us and that you would use us to change this world. I honestly don't know what it would look like if we did that, but I want to find out. And I want you to prompt us to do that together. I also want you, God, through this season, to draw lots of people to faith in you. Maybe some of them are in this room. Maybe some of them are friends with people in this room. But you would invite people into faith, and we would see their lives transformed as they hand them over to you, and they would put down roots into your life and your church, and you would begin to restore their soul. I pray for anybody you may be doing that with today. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for His ability to change our world. We want to pray now in His name.